Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
For many people here in the upstate of South Carolina, yesterday was a big day because a number of World War II veterans were taken to the Greenville-Spartanburg Airport, and they were flown then to Washington, D.C., on what's part of a flight called the Honor Flight, and they gather the still remaining World War II veterans. And as you know, as they're getting older, that group is getting smaller and smaller. But they take this group there, and they take them to the World War II monument there in Washington, D.C. They flew back then last night. They arrived at GSP about 8 o'clock last night, and they arrived to a number of people from the upstate of South Carolina there greeting them and with a thunderous applause as they came off of the plane and just showing their appreciation and gratitude for all that they've done. Well, I wanted to do a broadcast here about that issue, about honor and valor and showing respect for these men that have paid such a tremendous price in order to secure our freedom. I saw a book, a brand new book that had just been released. It's called No Greater Valor, and it deals with the Siege of Bastogne and the miracle that sealed Allied victory during World War II. The author is Jerome Corsi. He's a New York Times best-selling author. He also is one of the lead commentators for TeaParty.org. Jerome, it's a pleasure to have you on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast today.
It's my great pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Well, Jerome, how'd you end up deciding to write about this particular battle? What was it about this battle that captured your attention and caused you to spend so many hours doing such great research work in order to put this book together?
Well, I think it probably started when I was a child. I mean, I'm a son of a World War II veteran, and my dad's buddies at the end of World War II, you know, I was born in 1946, would frequently talk about their war experiences. I would ask them all the time. They often were initially reluctant, but eventually they came around. And the story of Bastogne intrigued me as a child. I mean, it was a great victory, a very difficult win at the Battle of the Bulge, when the Germans towards the end of the war made one last surprise offensive out of the Ardennes forest in Belgium, and surprised and overwhelmed the U.S. forces, pushing us back and, you know, threatening to go to Antwerp and cut off U.S. supplies. And the thing that intrigued me about this battle always was, of course, it's the great siege. The 101st Airborne was encircled in Bastogne, and as we tell the story, you know, they were nearly going to be annihilated, and the weather was horrible. What always struck me in hearing the story of the battle was whether or not, you know, God intervened. This was kind of a question. Even when I went back and started studying it, I spent years working on this book, went to the military records. The historians at the time and the soldiers at the time seemed to say, like, for instance, you know, the 101st was called out of bivouac in France. They had just been in this horrendous Operation Market Garden fighting, and they were getting a few weeks' rest, and the battle occurred, and really the 101st and the 82nd Airborne were the only seasoned divisions we had in Europe that could go try to stop this German advance. And they went in the middle of the night in open vehicles that they traveled all night with the lights on to get there fast. It was very dangerous. And even the historians say that the general who was there was a guy named McAuliffe, you know, who should not have been the commander, because General Maxwell Taylor, who was the commander of the 101st at the time, was in the United States briefing in the Pentagon after Operation Market Garden. And McAuliffe was the artillery commander. He was an older gentleman, and he was, you know, but he turned out to be the exact right guy, the perfect commander to, because it ended up being an artillery battle the way he fought it. And even the historian said, you know, when the 101st arrived in the middle of the night, where McAuliffe had them stage was almost providential, because he put them in the exact right place in the battlefield where it was best for them to be situated. Although McAuliffe had just gotten there himself by jeep, he went in advance of the troops and was just figuring out the situation, had a very incomplete information of what the battle situation was when McAuliffe arrived at Bastogne. The corps commander, Middleton, was there, and they were just trying to figure it out. And McAuliffe said, I'll go out myself and find, because the advance party got lost. And so he found the exact right place to stage the 101st when it arrived starting in the morning to engage the Germans and try to hold the German advance so that Bastogne, which was this great crossroads town, might have a chance of surviving. So from the time I was a child and I heard the story, it was a great story of courage, of determination, and also, you know, not so much luck, I think, is really the faith and the religion of the men who fought the battle and the women who fought the battle really inspired them to see that this was God intervening to have them win a situation which, you know, was desperately against them. They were ultimately encircled and they should have lost.
Well, I definitely agree with you. Excuse me. I'm not one for believing in luck, and I believe, you know, this impersonal force that's out there. I believe in the providence of God, and I believe that God intervenes in the affairs of men. And to hear you point that out in a battle like this, I think these battles, of course, this determines the course of the war. You were pointing out in the very beginning about the Battle of the Bulge, and the bulge, for our listeners' sake, refers to the line. If you looked at the front, the line that was there, the bulge part was that line on a map where the German front was, bulged way into the Allied areas that they had taken over, and as they were making their advance. And so they, you know, tremendous bulge was in that line by the German army. And so this was a real issue, that this thing could go either way, right, Jerome?
That's exactly right. When I wrote this book, No Greater Valor, which is just now coming out, it's, you know, be on the book stands and to be available. Certainly the original publishing day was going to be November 11th, which was a, you know, really appropriate day, so you're getting an advanced look at it.
Yes.
But it's coming into the bookstores now. When I started No Greater Valor to tell this story, what was clear when the 101st showed up, and, you know, the middle of the night, they didn't have proper equipment. They were, you know, didn't have the proper clothes. They were being resupplied. They were being taken out of line to get a little rest. And they traveled the middle. Well, there's everyone was, you know, running and deserting because they're falling back. The German advance in the Battle of the Bulge came by surprise. It was a horrible tank charge. And many of the U.S. units that were holding the original line simply ran out of ammunition. They ran out of bullets. They couldn't fight any longer. And yet they were coming back and they were telling the 101st, you know, the Germans have tanks up there, they're going to kill you, you're all going to die. But instead of feeling that fear, the 101st took their weapons and their clothes and said, you know, if you guys aren't going to use those, you know, M1 Garands, we could use them. And they got, you know, resupplied on the fly, brought in there and thrown into the battle. And McAuliffe, who was the tank, he was a artillery commander, had just the right number of artillery, just the right, again, seemed providential that he had. And Patton sent the 10th Armored's Combat Command B, one of the main units of the, you know, the three main regiments in the 10th Armored Division. And they arrived at about the same time at night that the 101st was beginning to come in, and that was just enough tanks and anti-tank, you know, weapons, vehicles, in order to hold the German advance off. it wasn't just the 101st. There were other units who fought with great valor. But the 101st then began filling in the lines, and McAuliffe began saying, okay, we're going to be encircled. And this was a small group, under about 10, 12,000 men, against 50 to 70,000 Germans with heavily armed tank charges coming at them. And as I described these battles, I mean, they got down to, you know, McAuliffe deciding exactly where to send the units he had, and that met the current German charge, you know, for instance, to the coming from the east of Bastogne. And that just happened to be right. But the men, as I write it and describe it, you know, the commanders, Eisenhower and Bradley, are trying to figure this out. Patton is in the first hours deciding he's going to have to move the entire Third Army, pivot it north, and, you know, to get a huge force march to try to help these guys. And the weather was terrible. You had no air supply. They had no equipment, no food, virtually no ammunition, but just enough. That was the key, and McAuliffe was using it in a brilliant fashion without proper information. He really did not have good accurate intelligence, but yet McAuliffe was able, and again, it seemed providential, to just do the right things needed at the time in order to, in the first few hours, and this was right at Christmas time. Everybody was thinking, you know, we might be going home for Christmas. The war is coming to an end. And the Germans had this huge tank charge out of the Ardennes forest in Belgium, you know, a few days before Christmas, and the Americans are totally caught unprepared. And so it's a huge story of a few U.S. military taking the initiative and putting their lives at risk, knowing they're going to be encircled. And fortunately, you know, with the paratroopers, the 101st, well, they were trained to be encircled.
And they were trained
to fight from behind enemy lines.
When you talk about this tanks coming after them, this was Hitler's feared Panzer division, right?
That's right. And these Germans at the end of the war had still, you know, very excellent equipment. They had some of the biggest, you know, Tiger tanks. These were fiercely experienced units the Germans had in the field, or at least the tank commanders. And, you know, as I read the nature of how the combat was, we had men in the field, the 101st, with, you know, carbines and maybe a bazooka out there trying to stop German Tiger tanks and, you know, and Panzers.
Yes.
And it's just amazing and astounding that they did it. But
now
over the course of the battle, McAuliffe learned to take his artillery, and he knew that the Germans had to come in along the roads because it was winter. Bastogne was a crossroads town. That's why it was so important strategically to defend it. We could hold Bastogne, we could turn back the whole German advance. And McAuliffe just learned how to use the artillery to sight in where the German panzers were advancing, stop the advance so that the 101st and the others, as basically fighting as infantry, could shoot the field soldiers, the foot soldiers, coming in behind the tanks of the German advances. And it was a brilliantly designed campaign by McAuliffe, who was really not even the, you know, commander of the 101st. And they got down to the battle to just before Christmas, where they had, you know, just one or two rounds, shells per gun, either the carbines or the artillery. And, you know, this was another aspect of the battle which Patton was advancing from the south, famous forced advance where he turned the Third Army and the tanks charged north, and Patton had a prayer said. Well, the prayer was for good weather, and the prayer actually seemed to work. Right as all the soldiers of the 101st and the 10th Armored and the artillery at Bastogne were running out of ammunition, the weather broke and the air supply could reoccur. And so as I tell the story in, you know, No Greater Valor, which is the book, you know, this was viewed at the time as an act of God to break the weather. The weather had not been predicted to break. in the middle of one of the fiercest winter storms in 1944. And remember, this happened now. This is, what, the 70th anniversary of the battle. And fortunately, there are yet some who fought the Battle of Bastogne yet alive, and they are truly great heroes.
Now, was there an offer to surrender prior to when things looked pretty bleak and before that weather broke and the prayer had been prayed? What was that offer to surrender?
Well, that's also a very famous. The Germans came through the line, and McAuliffe was asleep, the commander, and he felt like, you know, he had the defense figured out, and so it was almost like a castle. You know, they were the castle. They had the artillery inside the castle. The Germans were trying to take the castle along these different lines of, you know, radio lines around the wheel of the castle. And McAuliffe thought the Germans were coming to surrender to him.
Hmm.
Well, they came in with a white flag, and they woke General McAuliffe up. He was in the Heinz Barracks, where his command headquarters were in Bastogne. And they said, McAuliffe said, well, they've come to surrender. They said, oh, no, General, they want you to surrender. And McAuliffe, waking up, said, oh, nuts.
And then
he was disappointed.
Yes.
And so McAuliffe finally said, okay, well, what am I going to tell them? And his G2, one of the, you know, people who were on his staff, said, well, General, what you said to start with wasn't bad.
Yeah.
So he wrote down nuts on the across the order to surrender, and he gave it back to the Germans.
Hmm.
The Germans said, what does this mean? And they said, he's saying no. He's not going to surrender.
Yes.
Well, that was probably the most famous one-word response of the entire World War II.
Exactly.
And it electrified the troops.
And I think that we should remember that the Germans thought that this was going to be a very quick victory. They didn't think that this was going to go on as long as it did. To now receive back from the commander on the other side that you thought, you know, this was going to be over in a short period of time, and they were going to be more than willing to give up at this particular point. To receive back as response, you're nuts, or just nuts, back from him must have been completely shocking to them. And then to have the weather break thereafter and must have just really gave a surge to the Allies and must have made the Germans begin to wonder what was going on across those lines.
Right. Well, that's why I say it seemed like the hand of God. And, you know, Patton said about McAuliffe saying nuts to Hitler, he said, any general that eloquent deserves to be saved. And, of course, that message went all across, you know, the world, the newspapers of the United States. Well, the C-47 pilots, and this is, you know, the air resupply, the C-47s, which later became the DC-3, I mean, these were also great heroes because they were flying, still in bad weather, trying to get the Pathfinders in and drop supplies on Bastogne, and many got shot down. They were flying at a very low level. The Germans had, you know, excellent, even, you know, anti-aircraft guns around, and the C-47s got through with, you know, just enough, again, shells and food, minimum food. They brought in some of the wrong shells to begin with. I mean, it took several days of airlift and several days of huge losses of the C-47 pilots showing great courage. But also then it got into the air the P-47s, the fighters, which had not been able to fight. And, you know, again, just fortunately, one captain who had been experienced in kind of forward air, one of the first guys we had in the U.S. Air Force or Army, the Army Air Force at the time, who figured out that, you know, if you had spotters on the ground that could direct the fighters, just like spotters to direct the artillery, when the P-47s were coming in, he could tell them by radio where to go. And so, again, it was a brilliant set of using air command when it was available. Because the P-47s now could see the Panzers' tracks in the snow. They could follow them into the forest when they went back to, you know, get out of the way of the air attack. This was, again, at Christmas time. This was happening at Christmas time.
Yes.
You know, the Christmas day, the Germans, so angry they couldn't take Bastogne, bombed it. And they bombed it from the air and, you know, destroyed one of the hospitals. In the very early days of the battle, the hospital that had been set up by the 101st got captured by the Germans. Mm. And this was on the, you know, this was on the west side of Bastogne. That was the first indication that they were being encircled, because they thought that was in a safe area. They had no hospital facility as well, the 101st and the 10th Armored fighting in Bastogne. Mm. They were being cared for in town, and, you know, the basement of one of these buildings, and it got bombed, and a great number of wounded and the medical people trying to save them were killed.
Hmm.
And almost no medical supplies, and then the hospital was bombed on this Christmas Day bombing.
Hmm.
But I tell the story of how remarkable it was, because Christmas Eve, the battle almost kind of stopped. It was kind of a magical moment. And the church services held all through.
Hmm.
And the U.S. troops were, you know, attended those church services.
Hmm.
And it was, you know, a very inspirational moment when you realize that, you know, they likely felt they were going to die, because they knew, you know, Christmas Day, they were going to just get, the Germans were going to throw everything they had at them, and they did. And Patton had not yet relieved Bastogne. He was desperately trying to get to Bastogne, but he didn't make it on Christmas Day. So even the Christmas Day episode that I tell the story in, you know, the No Greater Valor, was a brutal and terrible day of fighting, and the men anticipated it in the trenches, the forward lines,
mm-hmm.
expecting that, again, the middle of the cold winter, freezing, you know, foxholes, and eating cane rations if they had them, you know, getting gangrene feet from the cold weather and the water flowing in. I mean, I don't know how these men ever survived.
Mm.
And then to face off, you know, a desperate Christmas Day tank charge where Germans were throwing everything they had at Bastogne to finally try to take it, in anger and in desperation that they had been rebuked in this small group of, you know, fighters from the 101st Airborne, which today, by the way, is distinguished by, you know, not only fighting in the Middle East, but is in Liberia, having to combat. They had to leave. I was in Fort Campbell doing research. The 101st right now is serving, you know, again, outstanding duty as one of the most decorated units in World War II, continuing through Korea, Vietnam, and today on the front lines fighting Ebola. It's really ought to. These men and women really do have no greater valor, and continuing to be so, as I titled the book.
Yes, excellent, excellent book. I just love the telling of the story. I have a little 8-year-old grandson who just has fallen in love with the Second World War and takes books out of the library on a regular basis. And just recently, they had the P-51 fighter along with B-17 and B-24 bombers here in Greenville, and we got to go over there and go through those aircraft and also talk with some of the pilots and so forth. And so he's just enamored with the entire story. So I've been sharing with him some of the things that I've been seeing here in the Battle of Bastogne, one of the few ones that he wasn't that familiar with. Got to ask you one quick question here. We have about a minute left, Jerome.
Sure.
But bring it up to date now. This valor that you talk about, no greater valor. What's the message for people today? Speak to the young person. We have just a minute left, but tell them why this matters to them.
I think the whole point of no greater valor, when I wrote this on the Siege of Bastogne, the miracle that sealed the Allied victory, which is subtitled the book. I mean, it's the moral courage, the conviction that God was taking a hand in this, and fighting an enemy, which, you know, the American soldiers were aware of the massacre at Malmedy and were beginning to be aware that the concentration camps were real. I mean, this Nazi Germany was evil, and if we really see it evil.
Yes.
And it took great, great personal courage, huge losses. I mean, to think about when you read No Greater Valor, you read and understand what the men and women fighting that battle, the trenches, in the cold, not proper equipment, no boots, no overcoats, maybe M1, you know, Garand, maybe weapons, maybe some ammunition for that, but a few rounds in the middle of the winter at Christmas time, and yet to hold out and to win.
Yes.
That's the moral courage that I think has made the 101st of the United States of America great.
And that's what we need today. Jerome Corsi, thank you so much for writing this book. Thank you for being with us today to talk about it. I want to make sure I mention the title again and tell our listening audience where they can get a copy. But thank you so much for joining us today.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Again, that was Jerome Corsi, and we were talking about his book, No Greater Value. You can just type that in. Amazon has a copy of it and so forth. The Siege of Bastogne and the Miracle that Sealed the Allied Victory.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the Donate button.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.